world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Could your aging parents be hooked on drugs? Good grief! Last week it was sex. This week it's drugs. Like we have nothing else to worry about. This week, Diane uncovers the truth about a raging opioid epidemic nobody's talking about. Until now. And you won't believe the cause.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. So last week we talked about our parents and sex. This week we're going to talk about drugs and our parents. And I'm still trying to think of an angle for rock and roll for next week. But this week, I wanted to talk to you about an email I got from Dr. Jennifer Naidoo in South Africa. She pointed me to an interesting article in the South African Medical Journal regarding a growing problem with medication-related issues and the elderly. Jennifer writes, "Dear Diane, I love your show. I have shared it with many of my colleagues and regularly recommend it for listening to my patients' family members. Thank you, Dr. Naidoo. I really appreciate that. As a gerontologist in the private health sector, I am concerned to see a growing number of medication-related complications in the patients I consult with. With the number of older and very old people increasing rapidly here in South Africa, I am witnessing a growing trend toward inappropriate medicine prescribing in our older population. The majority of pensioners I consult with are suffering from more than one chronic disease. It is not uncommon to see patients who are simultaneously receiving medications for as many as 11 conditions. To that end, there has been an increase in the complexity of medication regimens used to treat many of my older patients, and they usually have multiple prescribers. Thus, there is an increased risk of developing drug-related complications. As the study I have referenced for your consideration seems to indicate an increase in the use of drugs that may be potentially inappropriate for use in the elderly. Interestingly, two of the top offenders are benzodiazepines, used to control anxiety, and opioid-based narcotics to treat chronic pain. As a practitioner, this concerns me, since I'm seeing a growing trend of elderly addicted to those drugs, as well as a marked increase in potentially fatal drug interactions. In speaking with colleagues in the UK and Canada, they seem also to be seeing this trend. My question to you, Diane, do you also see this trend in the US? Jennifer, yes, we do. We definitely are seeing this trend here. Jennifer, this is amazing that your email came at this particular time, because all we hear about right now in the news is the opioid problem, and politicians are scrambling to try to figure out how to control this big problem. But they're focusing on young people, you know, getting drugs on the street. They're not focusing on the elderly. And there's a big opioid addiction problem like that I see and like Jennifer are seeing that involve the elderly. And no, that doesn't mean that Meemaw's out on the street corner selling herself for a nickel bag of smack. But chances are her pusher is wearing a clean white lab coat and her Medicare Part D prescription plan is paying for her daily fix. Doctors have been prescribing our parents with pain medication for chronic pain from arthritis, cancer, and other illnesses that become more common in later life. A recent study found that 15% of seniors were prescribed an opioid when they were discharged from the hospital. Then 3 months later, 42% of those people were still taking that opioid pain medication. Which means what? Those people are likely hooked. And it gets worse. You know, the elderly population, when they go to the doctor, they feel if the doctor doesn't give them a prescription, then the doctor isn't listening to them, or the doctor isn't doing their job, the doctor's no good. You know, if the doctor says, I want you to just rest, or, you know, take two aspirin or whatever, they're like, he didn't even give me a prescription for that. And they never go back to that doctor. So, you know, they feel that a doctor's worth really is related to what prescriptions they get, what medication he gives them. There was a poll in the Washington Post that of the people surveyed, 1 in 3 said they took a prescription opioid for 2 months and they felt that they were then addicted or physically dependent on the prescription. So why is it surprising that the elderly end up addicted? Look in your mother or father's medicine cabinet, and I bet you'll find a few common addictive drugs in there. Last year, nearly 12 million Medicare beneficiaries received at least one prescription for an opioid painkiller, and that cost taxpayers $4.1 billion. And what were the most common drugs? OxyContin and fentanyl. So why are doctors pushing so much dope to our elderly parents? Well, some experts are saying the root cause of the so-called opioid epidemic may be blamed on the unintentional consequences of the Affordable Care Act. What does that mean? Well, we get a lot of unintentional consequences when politicians and bureaucrats meddle in anything of importance. So part of the Affordable Care Act, or more commonly known as Obamacare, that changed the way hospitals and doctors are paid. So doctors and hospitals are now being graded for patient satisfaction. And that grade has a bearing on what they are reimbursed from Medicare for their services. How are they rated? Well, the government uses a random survey. And of course, because it's a government thing, the survey has this long and complicated name. It's called the Hospital Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers and Systems, or HCA-HPS Survey. So that's a mouthful. So this survey has 32 questions on it, and it's randomly given to adult patients, and those who had to be inpatients, who once they were discharged, it's randomly given to certain adults. So the government's thinking is to create this standardized report card that the public can get on doctors and hospitals. So patients are asked to rank their recent experience with their hospital and the doctors, nurses, and any other medical professionals who they saw while they were in the hospital. So this data from the surveys is compiled, analyzed, and then it's made available to the public on Medicare.gov's Hospital Compare website. So what this survey does, it ranks a patient's whole hospital experience. So how well the nurses and doctors talked with the patients. How responsive was the hospital staff to the patient's needs. How well the staff explained things to them, you know, their new medicines, their treatments, what they have to do on discharge. How clean the hospital was, how clean their room was, how quiet were the rooms. And it goes on with these 32 questions. But this question, which is at the very core of the criticism as it relates to the opium epidemic, is how well did the hospital staff help patients manage their pain? So what's happening? Doctors, in order to avoid a poor survey and have Medicare reimbursement cuts, may be unconsciously taking the approach, when in doubt, write it out. And they're prescribing these powerfully addictive pain and anxiety medications for their patients. Because remember, the elderly don't think a doctor's doing his job unless they get a prescription from the doctor. So here you go. As far back as 2009, the American Geriatric Society came out strongly in favor of saying that seniors with even moderate pain should get some opioid therapy. So they were assuming that the elderly are less likely than others to become addicted. I remember this patient, I went into her home one day, and she was sitting in the recliner, and her husband opened the door for me, and her husband, came into the living room where she was sitting, and I was trying to talk to her, and she was just so nasty. And her husband's like, oh, wait a minute, she didn't have her medication yet. So I'm like, oh, okay. So he goes into the other room, and he comes back with this round, clear bowl, but it was a big bowl, of all these pills. I mean, there was like blue pills, purple pills, pink pills, yellow pills. There was every color pill in this bowl. And she goes into the bowl, and she's just taking handfuls of all these different color medications. And she takes them. And I say to him and her, what is she doing? And he's like, oh, she's taking her medicine. I'm like, well, what medicine is she taking? Oh, she's just taking her medicine that she needs. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? I mean, honestly, that's a true story. So, you know, the Geriatric Society assuming that seniors are less likely to become addicted is just like, I don't know, they're living in fantasy land. And this Dr. Mel Pohl agrees. He's the medical director of the Las Vegas Recovery Center. And he says this assumption is a horrible misconception. Now, Dr. Pohl, he's an addiction specialist. And he says there's no scientific fact or basis to say the elderly are less likely to be addicted to medication. He said the drug takes over in the brain. It doesn't matter how old the brain is. So, now, with elderly opioid addiction coming to light, some doctors are saying that the financial incentives for hospitals to improve the patient experience are causing doctors to prescribe narcotics too liberally. Well, of course. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, they're raiding doctors in hospitals, and they're attaching their reimbursement to, you know, these patients saying they were satisfied that their pain was, you know, controlled, that they were feeling good. I mean, it doesn't take a brain, anyone with any kind of, you know, medical degree to figure this out. So a recent article in the New England Journal of Medicine reports that doctors have even begun to express concerns over the policy, some even suggesting that Obamacare is actually driving the opioid epidemic. So what is the solution? The problem is a catch-22 because, you know, our parents have chronic pain. It's common among their age group, and there aren't many good options to treat it. Even aspirin and ibuprofen carry bleeding risks. So now the Geriatric Society is rolling back their enthusiasm for treating older people's pain with opioid treatment. They're saying, well, let's try all these other things first. But opioid medication still remains a popular tool to treat pain in older people. In the past 20 years, the rate of hospitalization among the elderly related to opioid overuse increased 4 times. Drug-related deaths of the elderly are often they're not counted or they're undercounted because it's assumed on death certificates that the person died of their age-related illness, not an overdose of pain pills. You know, they're not having autopsies done on older people. They're just assuming they're dying from, you know, whatever chronic illness they had. Even though there are, you know, low numbers of reported deaths of elderly dying from an overdose, there's a new analysis from Stanford University showing that people covered by Medicare have among the highest and most rapidly growing prevalence of opioid use disorder. And what is that? Opioid use disorder, it's a fancy way of saying old people are getting hooked big time. The study is saying that 6 out of every 1,000 Medicare patients are diagnosed with an opioid disorder, compared with 1 of every 1,000 patients covered by commercial insurance plans. Most people are able to take opioids in small doses, for short periods of time without a problem, but the elderly face specific issues. So what are these specific issues that, you know, are risking our parents being drug abusers from prescription medication? Well, first of all, it's in the numbers. Our parents take more prescription medicine than any other age group, and they often take more than one prescription a day. So this increases the risk for mistakes when taking medicine and for drug interactions. And a drug interaction happens when two or more drugs react poorly with each other. And, you know, the reaction could make some drugs less effective, some more effective, and some having harmful side effects. And then there's, you know, their makeup, their physiology. Aging slows down the liver's ability to filter medicines out of the body. So our parents might become addicted to a medication or have more side effects from a prescription drug, even at a lower dose, than would a younger person. And when we come back from the break, we'll continue with the list of what makes our elderly parents more at risk on these prescription medications. I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing. Which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Lipstick Bodyguard. Fear no evil. Get yours today only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Another issue with our parents is dosage. Unless the doctor takes into consideration the patient's age when prescribing a drug, the chances for a mishap is high, because medication dosages, they're typically based on a standardized optimal dose. And the standard optimal dose is the dosage that gives the greatest desired effect with minimum side effects. So for the most part, clinical trials are used to determine a drug's optimal dose. And they're set by studying, you know, how the drug was administered and the effects on a randomized sampling of average healthy people. Now, not everyone is average, not everyone is the same, and it's not based on the frail elderly. So there's many factors that your doctor, your parents' doctor, should take into consideration when deciding a dose of a drug to give to your parents: their weight, sex, ethnicity, their liver and kidney function, whether your parent is a smoker, what other medications they may be taking that may interact with the drug at your parents' age. And it's the last one that is a big concern, because you know, I've talked about this in other episodes, why I always stress taking your parent to a geriatrician, because that's one doctor who knows your parent better than you know your parent, knows your parent's habits, knows your parent's lifestyle, knows, you know, every medication your parent is on. And they're going to find out also, knowing what over-the-counter medications your parent is on. I also always stress going to one pharmacy. And I always stress those, you know, local privately owned pharmacies, because I always find that they're, you know, they take a more concern. They get to know who their clientele is. They get to know you. Of course, a pharmacist doesn't always know what over-the-counter medications your parents are trying at the moment, but you know, it's important, one pharmacy, you know, and a geriatrician if possible. But bottom line, a standardized optimal dose of an opioid painkiller like Valium, Xanax, Klonopin, or Ativan, they're very often used in the elderly to treat anxiety or panic attacks or insomnia, but a standardized dose can launch a frail 100-pound elderly woman into the stratosphere. So my mother-in-law was a perfect example. There was something about her body chemistry. I mean, if she was given 2 milligrams of Valium, she could not tell you her name for a week. I mean, that same dosage wouldn't even touch your average 20-year-old. I remember going and visiting her in the hospital one day, and you know, she couldn't wait to get out of the hospital, and she was saying, "Oh my God, this food is terrible." And then I went there to see her the next day, and they gave her some medication. She was in this recliner, and she was making this recliner go back, you know, shutting, putting it down, putting it up, putting it down, putting it up, putting it down, putting it up. And then she was saying to me, "Oh, Di, the food here is just wonderful. The food is so great." And she was like talking that way. And the food is great. I mean, yesterday she was telling me how terrible it was. And it was like she was just stoned, you know. And so I went out there and I'm like, what are you giving her? "Oh, we tried her on a different..." I'm like, "Well, did you notice, you know, she was like on this recline?" I said, "She's gonna fall out of this chair." And she's singing her words, something is wrong, and she's saying the food is wonderful, you know. So I mean, you know, these things have to be noticed. So another problem with the elderly is alcohol use and medication. There were nearly 19,000 fatal overdoses on prescription opioids in 2014. And that's 2014 was the latest data I could find available. But I'd venture to say that many of these overdoses, alcohol use could be a mixture in that mix. For the elderly, overdose risk is heightened by medication interactions with alcohol, because alcohol can cause unpredictable serious side effects with the number of medications commonly taken by our parents. In general, mixing alcohol and other strong drugs can lead to side effects like changes in blood sugar leading to seizures, dehydration, changes in blood pressure, irregular heart rates, dizziness, loss of coordination, inability to concentrate, fainting or passing out, or even a coma. Alcohol combined with sedatives and opioids can be deadly. The most life-threatening side effects of mixing alcohol and hydrocodone or oxycodone or drugs like that involve depressed breathing. You know, if a person takes these two substances together, both alcohol and the opioid medication can slow down the person's breathing rate. Without enough oxygen, the brain begins to shut down, and the person can quickly suffer brain damage or death due to lack of oxygen. Alcohol can enhance the sedative effects of opioids and benzodiazepine medications, leading to increased drowsiness, which eventually leads to the person falling asleep and never waking up. If I don't know if you remember the Karen Ann Quinlan story. Back in 1975, she was 21 years old and she went to a party and she became unconscious after taking Valium along with alcohol. She lapsed into a coma and she remained in a vegetative state. She remained that way for 10 years until her life support was disconnected. She had never regained consciousness. So mixing alcohol and hydrocodone, oxycodone, or morphine increases the risk of people losing their balance, suffering severe falls. It's particularly true in the elderly. They can just take an opioid painkiller, or they can just drink alcohol, or they can combine the two substances and have a problem. These drugs, either individually or together, can lead to serious memory loss or increase the effects of dementia or loss of coordination. I could fill a whole show with stories of patients who have fallen down the steps or fell in the bathroom and hit their heads as a result of medication interactions with alcohol. So that's why it's important, you know, if you can go to the doctor with your parent or have, you know, someone go with them or have a qualified nurse or a qualified home health aide go with them. Because, you know, if you know that your parent routinely has a nightcap or a glass of wine or a cocktail before dinner, you have to let the doctor know. Our parents are from that generation where they did have a cocktail before dinner or wine with dinner or a nightcap. And, you know, when they have a glass of wine with dinner, they do that automatically. They don't think to tell the doctor about it. You know, they think nothing of it. And the doctor doesn't think to ask, you know, because he or she's concerned with the problems they came to him with, you know, the illness or the chronic illnesses that he's addressing during the visit. So they have no idea that, you know, your mom or dad may be chasing their sleeping pill with a shot of scotch, or they're taking their blood pressure medication with a beer back. You know, or if you were my aunt, she would just randomly decide if she thought her blood pressure was up that day, she'd just go and take one of my uncle's blood pressure medications. I'm like, you can't do that. Oh yeah, I just take one of his and I feel better. I'm like, but you're on other medicine. What if that? No, I'm fine. I mean, so there's a lot of these things that go on. And alcohol and drug dependence among the elderly is common, but it's frequently not diagnosed. And I've seen it a lot in all my years of practice. So, and, you know, because sometimes our parents are isolated from family or friends, you know, they may live in a retirement community or rural parts of the nation, their drinking problems may go undetected until they end up in the hospital from a fall or a serious alcohol-related health problem. In retirement communities, drinking goes on a lot. Drinking and partying, we don't even realize how much it goes on. But some of these retirement communities, in their clubhouses, they have these liquor lockers that they keep. And every time they have a happy hour or a party, they have parties for everything. Because, you know, they're retired. They don't have as many things to do. And they have these parties and they're drinking for everything. So we don't realize it, but that goes on a lot. In my experience, too, I found that, you know, people have a prescribed medication. The elderly, they maybe, you know, have a prescribed medication like a sedative. And then they take an over-the-counter medication that they have no idea what they're doing. They may be on Xanax for anxiety or an opioid for a chronic back condition. And then they're taking Tylenol PM to help them go to sleep. And the pharmacist doesn't know that they're taking these over-the-counter medications. So what do we do? How do we find out if your parent is abusing prescription drugs? Well, pay attention to his or her medicines and their behavior. A person who is addicted to a prescription drug, they may get a prescription for the same medicine from two different doctors. They'll go from one doctor, then they'll go to another doctor. This happens a lot. I see this a lot. Or they have a prescription for the same medicine filled at different pharmacies. That happens a lot too. I had a patient, and that's what she would do. The children would say, well, I went to the doctor. You know, they think she's only going to one doctor, and they'd go to the doctor with her and they'd say, please, you know, don't give her this medication. Don't give her these opioids. And the doctor would say, no, I'm not. But then she would just on her own go to another doctor, and she'd get a prescription, and then she'd go to another pharmacy and have it filled. So that's a very common thing that happens among the elderly. Sometimes they take more of the prescription medicine than they used to, or they're taking more than is instructed on the label. They're running out of the prescription way ahead of time. They take the medicine at different times or more often than is instructed. If you notice behavior changes, they may be becoming more withdrawn, or they're becoming agitated or angry, or they think and talk about the medicine a lot, or they're afraid to go without taking the medicine. They're defensive when you ask them about the medicine, or they make up excuses why they continue to need the medicine, or they store extra pills in their purse or in their pocket, or they hide the medicine. I remember going into this one patient's home, and, you know, she was addicted to opioids. She was addicted to painkillers. And the family said, okay, we've cleared out all the medicine, you know, that she went into the hospital and she went into rehab and, you know, to dry out. And they went into the home and they said, they've cleared out all the medicines. And I went into the home and they didn't think, but, you know, I opened the drawer and you look under her clothes and there's tissues and there's medicine in the tissues. There's, you know, medicine. I'm saying, you know, we have to look everywhere. There's medicine hidden in the refrigerator, in the freezer. There's medicine hidden in places that, you know, you don't think. They did that. They would hide the medicine so that, because, you know, they'd get home and they were, you know, without the medication for a while and they're doing okay. And then the minute they start to feel anxious or alone or something triggers whatever that feeling is, that they feel they have to take that medicine, and they'd go into their stash. So, and finally, you know, if they've been treated for alcohol, drug, or prescription drug abuse in the past, be aware of the type of drugs that can cause a problem. According to a recent government study, the leading opioids taken by Medicare patients were OxyContin, Percocet, Vicodin, fentanyl, or their generic equivalents. And fentanyl, it's an end-of-life drug, but I see that prescribed a lot to patients who have chronic back pain. They use it in patches, so that's a big one. So there's a lot of dope floating out around there. According to this same government study, there were about 40 million prescriptions for these drugs written last year alone. So that's enough prescriptions for every Medicare beneficiary in the country to get one. And my survival tip of the week, embrace your inner weirdo. Embrace being a misfit or an oddball. Embrace your quirkiness. It's your contribution to the world. When we were kids and we didn't fit in, it was painful. But as adults, it's painful not to be ourselves and accept who we are. It's where we're most comfortable. So my survival tip of the week, be yourself. If this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them about it. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 21, at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in a future show. You can email me at diane@parentsarehardtoraise.org. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Please remember to like us on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.